is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
March Madness rolls on even as we flip the calendar to April, which means as well, it's officially draft month in the National Football League. We're diving into draft props, season win totals, and a whole lot more as we welcome you into this Monday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside former NFL executive Mike Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. How was the weekend, Michael? How we doing? Lots of stuff going on.
A lot of stuff going on. I was very happy for our man Elliot to see Purdue make their Final Four appearance. Thought the games were fun to watch. Happy that I had Alabama in the family contest to get to the Final Four, although I'm probably going to end up in third place because two people ahead of me have Connecticut winning, and they're ahead of me already on points. So, you know, I'll take third place as a defending champion. What can I do? But I was excited for that. Yeah, it was great. It was a good weekend. Today's a bad day. I mean, today's one of those days you don't look at anything. April Fool's is like, really, all the idiots come out. They all come out today. Like, oh, I got you on that one. Like, seriously, who invented April Fool's? That's what I would like to know.
I don't know, but I am with you that it makes me so angry because it doesn't register for me when I woke up this morning, right? I wake up, I get on the computer, I'm checking my email, get on Twitter, and I see Justin Jefferson getting traded to the Steelers. Dustin Sweetelson, our own VSiN host here, engaged? That's not, it's a fake Adam Schefter account. Oh, Dustin's messing with us once again. So yeah, April Fool's is the worst. Yeah. I hate it and I'm very gullible. So when people say stuff to me in person, I'm going to believe it. And it is a recipe for disaster, Michael.
A recipe, like seriously, like it's just, I saw the Dustin one and with the wedding ring there and I'm like, okay, enough is enough. Like, all right, you know, like seriously, I'm out. I'm not buying this one. So yeah, I mean, it's just, because you'd forget what day it is, right?
Absolutely.
You know, and then we have all these fake accounts out there that are people trying to get. I mean, there was an account where, you know, the Georgetown basketball coach resigned because he said the job was too hard. Like, seriously, like that, you're looking at that ain't right. Like, that can't be right.
Michael, there was a report from Shams.
It's a lot of play.
There was a report from Shams today that Joel Embiid is set to return maybe as soon as Tuesday against OKC. Was that real or was that fake?
I think that's fake. I mean, I'm sure Shams thinks it could happen, but on the real surface, there's no way. That's tomorrow. That's tomorrow. I haven't seen one video clip of him on a court yet. And I live in Philly. I watch the news every day. Not that there's much sports on the news the way it is now, but come on, there's no way.
You're the best. Okay, well, let's start off the show at least living in the world of reality and get into a little bit of the action that we saw this weekend. So much fun seeing how the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 unfolded. We have all of the Final Four teams officially, NC State versus Purdue. I am particularly excited to see that big man matchup of DJ Burns and Zach Edey down low in Alabama, as you referenced, taking on the UConn Huskies, where UConn has just barreled their way through this tournament, Michael, night in, night out, and we've got another huge spread in the Final Four.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been unbelievable, right? I mean, UConn goes on that 30-love advance in a game against a really good opponent, and Illinois gets taken out of the game. Their best player can't even get a shot off. Somebody sent me an email today who was at the game and watched UConn in person and basically said that, you know, watching them in person, it's a completely different level of intensity than you can even glean from watching them on TV, which I think is right because, as I've said many times, Stormy, they're playing to a standard. They're not playing to their opponent. They're playing to a standard. They're playing to something bigger than we have to win the game. And that line keeps getting extended further and further out there as a standard. And I disagree. They won't find the disease of me. They're not going to find the comfort. They're not going to be content. They're just keep pushing the envelope every single game. And the way they're going through these teams, it's somewhat remarkable. And look, I feel bad. You know, Alabama's going to go up against a buzzsaw and they're going to have to shoot lights out for 40 minutes, not for 30 minutes, 40 minutes.
You look at the shooting percentages in that game, Illinois from the floor, 25.4% from three, 26.1%. And you referenced their best player, Terrence Shannon, goes 2 of 12 from the floor in that game, where it's 23-23. And then you look up a couple minutes later and 53-23. It's just something remarkable. I'm not usually a math major. You know, I went to journalism school for a reason, but I did some of the basic math on what we've seen from UConn in the tournament so far. 4-0 straight up ATS, average margin of victory, 27.8 points, their closest win by 17. Start of last year's tournament, 10-0 straight up in ATS, average margin of victory, 23.1, closest win, 13 points. They're the first team since seeding began, Michael, in 1979 to cover 10 in a row. They're awesome. And so now with a big number like this, once again, against Alabama, do you think with the scoring capabilities that the Crimson Tide have that they can keep up? Or do you think that it's another blowout type win again for UConn because they haven't shown us anything different?
I can't imagine that Alabama is going to be able to shoot at that level for the consistent level that you're going to need to shoot from, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be very difficult. Look, I felt like, I don't know about you, I watched the game. I thought Clemson was going to win. With 4 minutes to go in the game, I thought Clemson was going to win. But Alabama made great shots down the stretch, three-point shots. They were able to close the game out. And I thought they showed me something that I didn't know they had. They showed me mental toughness. They were willing to accept the challenge. They were willing to handle it. And I thought it was really impressive. But you've got to be able to do that now for 40 minutes. Yeah. I mean, you can't back off that at all. And I think ultimately that's going to be the hard thing to do. The numbers always revert back to the mean. And I think Sears is a great player. And I think what Stevenson gave him off the bench was remarkable, right? And Pringle, who I think was the unsung hero of their win, they're going to have to play at another level. They're going to have to raise their game even one more level if they can. And look, they shot 44%. And they were able to beat Clemson, but beating Connecticut's going to require shooting better than 44%. This a little bit reminds me of Villanova playing Georgetown back in, what, 86, 85, where you're just going to have to play your absolute best, not for 30 minutes, but for 39.59 seconds.
UConn laying 12, total 161.5. Purdue, meanwhile, laying 9 against NC State, who has been everybody's favorite team, everybody's favorite player in DJ Burns. The Wolfpack have been awesome to watch since they ran their way through the ACC tournament to this point. Favorites, though, of 9-plus points in this tournament, which matches each of the games that we're going to see here in the Final Four, 15-4 against the spread. So these big favorites in the tournament have been covering at a high rate. Can Elliott's team get it done against the team everybody is rooting for this year?
Well, look, I tell you, what I thought watching Duke North Carolina State was I thought North Carolina State was a tougher team. You know, I thought North Carolina State said, okay, we're going to spar here in the first half, but the second half, those body punches are going to wear. They did. I mean, they were really good at what they were able to do. And NC State Middlebrooks, to me, was the physicality that came into the game. He played 26 minutes. You know, he collected 4 offensive rebounds. He was forceful in the game. And, of course, you know, we know Horn and Burns are really good, too. And I just thought North Carolina State's mental and physical toughness wore down Duke. Hmm. Duke was no match for it. And you could see that NC State was the, for lack of a better term, the more mature team, the older team, right?
Yeah.
And I think the other thing we learned, we yesterday we did the show and we talked about the line was 7. And we had JVT on, and we were talking about how do you handicap that? Well, you know, the line was 11 on a new – you go through all the different scenarios. But the scenario you can't really adapt for is who North Carolina State is today. And it goes back to what Aristotle said about analytics. You can't analyze anything that changes because you can't keep up with the change. And I think that's where we are with NC State. And I think NC State will be a tough out for Purdue, there's no question. They match him in size. Eddie's not going to have his way around the rim like he did yesterday against Tennessee. And they're going to have to, their guards are going to have to play really well to beat NC State.
They've been an underdog almost every step of the way. Like you said, a 7-point, 7.5-point dog in that game against Duke. They win by 12, plus 260 on the money line. They were 200-1 to make the Final Four an 11 seed, but one that does not feel like a fluke by any means. And now, Michael, NC State has both the men and women's programs that are going to the Final Four. Although I don't envy the matchup. They got South Carolina coming up next. UConn with a chance tonight to get the double-double with the men and women in the second game of a doubleheader tonight that might be the most anticipated in women's college basketball history. Iowa LSU and UConn LSC tonight. It's going to be awesome on the women's side of things.
Yeah. Wow, that rating is going to be incredible. I'm looking forward to watching it, right? I'm looking forward to watching it. I was surprised that am I right? Did I read that LSU is the dog in the game?
Correct. Yeah. 1.5, 2-point dog.
Yeah. The way West Virginia played Iowa with the intensity and denial of getting Caitlin Clark the ball. Mm. And it was a struggle, that West Virginia game for Iowa. It was a real struggle. You know, to me, makes me think that LSU can match that intensity and the way they're well-coached as they are. I thought West Virginia gave a formula to where a chance to beat them. I really do.
I'm with you. Iowa obviously went off in this past game against Colorado. They brought their A game through and through, but we know this is a rematch of last year's national championship where LSU won 102-85. LSU is on a mission. They know that they are the villain and they are embracing that a little bit. I'm excited for the back and forth. I'm excited for the trash talk. I think it's going to be great, but I'm with you. Listening to a lot of these like in-depth women's basketball analysts, they say, okay, Iowa might be the top seed. Iowa might be the favorite, but LSU feels like the favorite based on the complete, full, well-rounded talent that they have on that team. We are going to hit the break. When we come back, get into a little NFL draft conversation. Quarterback matchmaker on the way.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you haven't already, make sure you check out the new and improved VSiN.com website today on the homepage. March Madness Hubs previews for all the men's and women's games, best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, everything you need to become a more informed bettor. Check out VSiN.com today, which, by the way, we will get the book's perspective on everything that happened this weekend in college basketball and looking forward with Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata, when he joins us a little bit later on this hour. Also in hour two, Jim Nagy will join us, executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, as we talk through a lot of these great prospects that are coming through. This is officially, we are in April, so it is draft month, Michael. And where I want to start here is we did an exercise earlier in the offseason, quarterback matchmaker, picking out a lot of the free agent quarterbacks and some of these prospects that are coming through in the draft and saying where we think is the best fit for these players. Well, a lot of the free agents have settled now. Let's look specifically toward the draft, not necessarily based on the lying season comments and the rumors, but where you feel genuinely is the best fit for a player. And we might as well, and again, once we pick a player for a certain team, no other player can go there anymore, right? So if you say Jaden Daniels to Washington, right, Washington's off the board. So we'll start at the top with the most obvious one, considering he's a minus 4,000 favorite to go number one overall to the Chicago Bears. But Caleb Williams, Michael, where do you think he is the best match? Where should he go?
Well, he's going to go to Chicago because he is the most talented player in the draft. He's not, you know, like all the guys in this draft, there's so much inconsistencies. And I would not call him a generational type player because there's too much inconsistencies in his play. There's some poor decisions. It just, you know, I mean, look, USC struggled to win. Now, it wasn't all his fault. Their defense was horrible. But I think the Bears, now the question really for the Bears is, what system do we want to have him operate best in? He's not, to me, a West Coast passer. He's more of a high-low reader on the outside. And I think ultimately play action, high-low reads, things like that, not RPOs. I don't, you know, the RPO game is slowly dying in the National Football League. But for me, it's his ability to run an offense from shotgun, use the intermediate passing game, not a West Coast, because I don't think his rhythm and his feet are always tied together, but high-low reads on the outside. And I think that's what Chicago's going to run. Look, one thing we do know about all these quarterbacks, they need a little bit of help. I mean, they're going to need some help from the supporting cast, and I think the Bears realize that.
And again, a huge favorite to do so, minus 4,000. You got to put up $4,000 just to win 100 back. The Commanders are sitting there plus 850, but the Bears, and we'll get into some season win totals a little bit later on in the show as well. Their win total, juiced to the over, by the way, sitting at 8.5. So a lot of high expectations after the 7-10 season with Justin Fields, that Caleb Williams and some of these other additions will turn things around for the organization. How about Jaden Daniels next? He is an odds-on favorite to go to the Washington Commanders right now, minus 160 the price. Is that the landing spot, or where do you think he fits best system-wise moving forward?
Well, I think with Kingsbury is going to run in Washington is what they run with for Kyler Murray in Arizona. You know, shotgun, not so more RPO with Murray. I think you definitely want to run some RPO with Daniel, but you got to keep him healthy. You don't want him getting hit too much. But because Daniels isn't a great anticipatory thrower, you've got to be able to run play action. You've got to be able to run those high-low reads on the outside and take advantage of his ability down the field. That's, to me, really important. So for hit me, I think what Kingsbury's going to do, he needs to be under center a little bit as well to run the hard play action to allow him to read it on the outside, read it on the inside. I think Kingsbury's fully the perfect offense for his skill set. Now, what about May and Kingsbury's offense? No, I think that's a little raw. I think May's going to need a little bit more, a different style of offense to best serve him, because when you watch the 20 to 21 tape or 22 tape, he throws with better rhythm than he does in 23. 23, he's all over the place and he's very inaccurate. I think it's yet to be declared what the best offense is for May, but I do think the best one for Daniels will be what Kingsbury runs in Washington.
And for those that were concerned after seeing the viral elbow photo from Jaden Daniels, he did come out and say, stop the cap. My elbow is perfectly fine. But yeah, coming off a 50 total touchdown season for Jaden Daniels, 40 through the air, 10 on the ground, 1,100 yards on the ground, a Heisman Trophy winning season. Teams are very excited about him, and rightfully so. The Commanders, again, minus 160, followed by the Patriots, who are picking in that third spot, plus 160. And then the odds fall off a cliff with the Vikings next there, 8-1. But let's go to Drake May, who you mentioned had a very different 2022 season than he did from 2023. He is plus 170 to be the number two pick. So you're getting plus money on that now, a place where he had been predicted to go throughout the course of this entire past calendar year. Minus 115 now to go 3, 8-1 to go 4, 20-1 to go 5. Where is the spot for Drake May, excuse me?
I think May is going to need to be in a system where it's almost West Coast-ish. Hard play action, run it. It's what Minnesota likes to run. Look, Minnesota got some productivity, whether it was with Dobbs for a couple games, you know, Nick Mullins. I mean, they're able to get some production. I think Kevin O'Connell would be a good coach for Drake May, because I think he'll be able to utilize his skill as an athlete, and he'll run a little bit of that West Coast where the ball's got to come out in time and they're going to force him to throw it to a certain spot. So I wouldn't be surprised if Minnesota were to trade up to get him. I think there's a couple quarterbacks that fit that Minnesota. I think May fits it. I think McCarthy fits it as well. But I would say that O'Connell's system in Minnesota would be really the right place for May.
So in that thought process, Michael, should the Vikings trade up to get him, what number are they trading up to? Because, again, the Patriots, who sit 3, minus 115, but to go 4, 8-1, to go 5, 20-1, how far would they have to trade up to get him if that's the guy?
Well, I think that you got to believe, and I said this on Mitch and Pauly today, you got to believe that the Patriots are taking a quarterback, right? They have one quarterback on a one-year contract, Jacoby Brissett. They have nobody else. They have Bailey Zappe. You know, if they were content without getting a quarterback, they would have done exactly what the Raiders did, give $15 million to Gardner Minshew, have Aiden O'Connell, who's earned the right to start according to his head coach, you know, and then go from there. And so I think because there is a sense of a void on their depth chart next year, that it would incline me to see, well, maybe if we take May, redshirt him, we can get him up to speed. I think the question with May is a little bit the same question you asked about Anthony Richardson last year. How fast can we develop his skill set? And he's got a much better tapestry of tape than what Richardson had. I mean, the 22 tape, when he was the player of the year in the conference, is good enough, right? You got to get him to that. And I think ultimately that would be the case. I could see New England, because I don't know what New England's going to run. What will Van Pelt run? You know, what is he going to? He's a West Coast guy. That's what his background is, from Green Bay. All West Coast. That's what terminology and everything with that. If that's what he runs, May could do that. So you could put him there, and that would mean Minnesota would have to trade to four if they wanted to get McCarthy.
Okay. So, but you're saying right now, based for the sake of this exercise, that the Vikings would be the better landing spot versus New England.
I think so. Well, because Josh McCown's in Minnesota and he coached the kid. I mean, they know him better than anybody, right? And I think they probably can figure out his ceiling, which is the most important thing. What is his ceiling? Where can he go?
So I asked that question because the next player, obviously, that we're going to pull up in this conversation is J.J. McCarthy, where he is favored to go to the Vikings at an even money price. But the Vikings are off the board because that's where we like Drake May. So where would the best fit then be for J.J. McCarthy?
I think it would be New England if they move down, right? I think it would be New England if they move down because he is a West. To me, J.J. McCarthy is the true West Coast style of player. He has very good foot quickness. He's athletic. He can throw the ball in rhythm. He's got a sense of timing. He's got good leadership skills. He's, you know, inaccurate at times, but he can throw the ball with accuracy on all three levels. I think it would be the ideal guy if, you know, New England traded down, or if Minnesota traded up a little bit, or even if Denver tried to get up. I think there'll be competition to see if he's the last one remaining before we get to Nixon Penix. Then I think there'll be competition between the Denvers and maybe even the Raiders or some other team looking for a quarterback.
Okay. Again, Vikings, even money. Expect them to trade up to get a quarterback given the assets that they picked up from the Texans. The Giants, who are there at six, but also have talked about trading up not being out of the realm of possibility, plus 275. Washington also plus 275. New England plus 350. And the Broncos 7-1. How about Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr.? Where do you see them going?
Well, I think Bo Nix could be perfect for what Sean Payton wants to do. I think he's got really good foot quickness. I think he can throw the ball with rhythm. He's good accurately. I think he's smart enough to handle what Sean wants him to do at the line of scrimmage. The Michael Penix one's fascinating because if Al Davis were alive, Michael Penix would be the guy he would want to pick because he's incredibly accurate on the third level. He can make plays down the field, and he can run. And, you know, and Al has drafted left-handed quarterbacks in the past before. Some coaches don't like left-handed quarterbacks. You remember Todd Marinovich, left-handed quarterback. Kenny Stabler, left-handed quarterback. So he's been down this road before. Not that he's making these picks. But the deep ball would be enticing to him. And I think that's the Rams. I think it could be the Raiders as well.
The Raiders plus 320 to land Michael Penix Jr. Minnesota, the plus 250 favorite. Broncos are an even money number for Bo Nix. And first round quarterbacks over under 4.5. We'll be right back in Behind the Book with TG Thomas Gable when we return.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Pro days for all the major draft candidates are in the books, and somebody who knows these guys intimately, sees them up close and personal throughout the process, joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Jim Nagy, Executive Director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, 18-year scout. And Jim, before we get into these prospects, you've been watching the NCAA tournament just like the rest of America and tweeted over the weekend, anyone else having trouble watching NC State big man DJ Burns and not thinking about him kick sliding and pass pro or getting out on poles because it can't just be me. And we have been saying all postseason, this guy got mixed up in the sports he decided to play in college, Jim.
Yeah, Stormy, good to be on with you and Mike again. Yeah, I mean, it's a natural for a football person when you're watching basketball, and I don't watch a lot of basketball outside March Madness. So that was my first introduction to this big guy, and you know, he's nimble and he's got a soft touch, and so I'm just thinking, geez, it'd be nice to work this guy out. Now, you know, you don't know if he played high school football. I mean, when you look at the guys that have converted and been successful, like Antonio Gates was a good high school football player. You know, so you don't know that. You don't know the background. You don't know what he's like in the weight room. I mean, there's certainly things you don't know about, but you're curious. Like, let's put him through an offensive line workout or a tight end workout and let him see if he can catch the ball. So, no, that's just where a football guy's brain goes. I'm sure Mike's brain went there, too. And then as soon as I posted that the other night, I tweeted this out today. I had three guys from the league hit me up. They're like, yeah, we think the same thing. We'd love to work this guy out. And then right before I jumped on, I was grabbing some lunch here down the street from our Senior Bowl offices. And I had one of the scouts that scouts that part of the country for an AFC team was like, dude, you are killing me with these DJ Burns posts, because that was my plan. Was he was hoping, his hope was that NC State got knocked out in the first round, and he was going to, and he lives there. He lives in the research triangle there in North Carolina. He was going to slide in and work out DJ by himself. He's like, well, you've blown that up, man. But no. Yeah. So it's awesome. Again, I'm not saying the guy can play in the NFL, but I think every football person is curious, like, what would that look like?
Yeah, no question. You know, and I mean, if he were a little bit better shape and he ran faster, you might think tight end. His hands are so damn soft. You know, you think he'd be good. But, you know, I don't know. Lining up and getting that foot kicked out requires a lot of toughness. I don't know if those guys actually have it. And, you know, what happens if he gets drafted or he goes over to Europe and gets guaranteed money? That can always deter you from taking the path in the NFL. But, all right, let's go back to the quarterbacks, the subject at hand. So I said on my podcast today that I think Michael Penix, when the medicals start to come out and he gets cleared up, he will move up the board a little bit because of his workout and how fast he ran. Have you heard the same thing, that Michael Penix is kind of being looked at in a different light based on the workout?
Yeah, Mike, I'll say this. When I was in Baton Rouge last week, I stayed at the same hotel as, I mean, shoot, the entire Patriots brass was there, you know, Elliot Wolf and Gerard Mayo and Adam Peters and Dan Quinn were there. And we were all down in the lobby one night just talking about these guys. And again, I said, is Penix going in the first round or not? And it was really split. There was, you know, three or four guys that were convicted. Yeah, Jimmy's, he's definitely going to go in the first. And then a couple, I was like, nah, he's probably more of a second. So I think it's pretty split, Mike. I think where it comes down on Penix is that, and you know this, I mean, usually the medical stuff doesn't get out in the media into the fans. I mean, but Michael's medical stuff has been so, you know, highly publicized. I think people have just knocked him for it. You know, I think the media's knocked him down for it. I think that the, you know, the fans on Twitter have, you know, on social media have knocked him down for it. So yeah, but a clean bill of health. I was just watching him today. I went back and watched Indiana tape to see if that Indiana tape looked any different. He's such a good thrower of the football, and I've said it, and Mike, you can disagree. I mean, you worked with this man, and you were really close to Al Davis. I've always, if Al Davis were still here, he would be the Raiders' first round pick, would he not? You know, with that vertical throwing. But
I said it on the pod today, Jim.
Yeah, I mean,
Jim,
yeah,
I said it on the pod today. I love it. I mean,
Go ahead, Michael.
Go ahead. Well, if they really believe they have the Raider tradition and understand it, Penix is the guy. Penix is the guy because Al wanted to run over routes, vertical routes, third level routes, and he wanted a quarterback who could run. And Al didn't mind left-handed quarterbacks. Some coaches mind it, right? They don't want it.
Yep.
You know, Al had Kenny Stabler. He had Todd Marinovich. He didn't mind it. So it's going to be fascinating to see how they rank them.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I do think a clean medical will help him for sure.
And Jim, you mentioned being out there in Baton Rouge, so you got to see Jaden Daniels and the LSU Pro Day up close and personal. What were some of your big takeaways from him and the way that he's catapulted in so many scouts and analysts' minds over recent weeks?
Yeah, I've been watching Jaden for a long time now, so this was kind of close the book for me with Jaden. He's just an easy thrower of the football. You hear people say the ball jumps off a guy's hand. I kind of chuckle when people – that's a pretty overused term. But, I mean, the ball just comes off his hand so clean with such good velocity. He struggled a little bit in the early part of the workout on a couple of deep balls he missed. But, again, not a big deal. I thought it was a really good throwing session. I was actually standing with a GM who's been – he was at Caleb Williams and J.J. McCarthy's. And I said, okay, where do those three rank? And they were going to Drake May's the next day. The next day, Penix and May had theirs. And this GM said McCarthy 1, Jaden 2, and Caleb Williams 3 was his rank, and he was at all three of those.
Oh.
Wow, that's impressive. Hey, all right, so you're at LSU's workout. Neighbors, what's your read? Would a team take Neighbors ahead of Harrison?
Ooh. You know, you got to love that Malik did everything, right, Mike? I mean, I think you and I are probably both kind of old school. We probably got to get with this new wave of guys opting out of doing everything. And I'm not taking any shots at Marvin Harrison. I mean, and I don't think the league is really taking a hard stance over it either. But the fact that Neighbors went out there, and not only did he run 140, he ran a 740. A lot of guys aren't doing right now. I would throw a Dunesy in there too. Like, to me, this isn't a two horse race. To me, I think it's a three horse race. I'm a huge Roma Dunesy fan. So, I think it could happen. We'll see. I mean, I do think there's going to be a run on those quarterbacks. I would love to be in the LA Chargers seat right now, Joe Ortiz in his first draft, because I think that he's going to control a lot. I think they're going to get a king's ransom for that fifth pick. And Monty Austin Ford sitting there at Arizona at four. I mean, you know, Mike, you've been in that GM chair. I think both those guys are sitting pretty when it comes to either, you know, stay put and take a really good wide receiver, or, you know, trade out for one of these quarterbacks in stockpile picks. But all three of those top receivers are legit.
And Jim, because you mentioned where J.J. McCarthy ranked in that one executive that you spoke to, and where the Chargers sit at the opportunity, his former head coach in Jim Harbaugh has been ranting and raving about how J.J. McCarthy, the best pro day that I've ever seen for a quarterback. He's the top tier, top of this class, XYZ. Where does J.J. McCarthy rank in your mind? Because you have these people that view him one way, is now a top four pick, top two pick in a lot of senses for some folks out there, and then others that are saying, what are we missing because we haven't gotten to see XYZ on the field during his collegiate career?
I'll start by saying Coach Harbaugh, and I love him, but he is in a perfect position right now with sitting there with Justin Herbert. So he can say these things about J.J. McCarthy, and he doesn't have to put his money where his mouth is. So this whole thing worked out perfectly for Coach Harbaugh. But no, you know, JJ is probably the guy that I spent the least amount of time studying. You know, I actually, when they finished up the national championship game, I reached out to Coach Harbaugh. He connected me with JJ's dad, you know, cause we tried to get him in the Senior Bowl. We could bring juniors to the game this year for the first time ever. And they just played so much. His dad was like, Jim, he's just played 15 games. I think we're good. So I didn't spend as much time. I do know, and I went to Michigan, so I have watched a lot of JJ. I'm not trying to dodge the question. He has a really elastic arm. You know, he can throw it on the move. He's a really good athlete. I wish he would have run. I wish all these quarterbacks would have run. Because again, like, I think Bo Nix would have run well. I think JJ would have run well. There at the Baton Rouge Pro Day. I mean, I had people in the building telling me that Jaden Daniels would have run with Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas, and both those guys touched in the 4.3s. So I wish these quarterbacks would have done that. It would have been fun to see where they all came out. But no, it just feels like JJ is, there's so much late buzz on him. You know, it's not like JJ is an unknown guy. Everyone's known about JJ. This guy isn't like a Johnny come lately. So it just feels a little weird. But we'll see. I don't know if it's the Jim Harbaugh stuff or not, but, you know, those other three guys were kind of settled in those top three spots, and there's certainly been a late push for JJ.
Jim, I have 50 more questions, but we have to hit a commercial break, unfortunately. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, thanks.
Great job.
Thanks for having me on again. See you, Mike.
Always enjoy getting to hear some of that insight from Jim Nagy, again, executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl. I did, Michael. I'm sorry. I know we had more, but the music comes in, and it says we got to go.
I know. It just showed up quick. That was quick. I know.
Heartbreaking.
I love that he recognized Al Davis. I love that. He knew that one right there.
He was echoing all of those thoughts that you had with Michael Penix Jr. in that connection. We'll be right back. Step into Michael's office coming up next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here with the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And for a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free when you sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all of the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion for not just today, but future events as well. Take advantage. This is a limited time offer. VSiN.com/splits. Visit the page now to claim your free 2-week access to VSiN's betting splits.
appointments are lined up.
You waiting for somebody in there?
Got an appointment.
And it's not about what you want to hear, but what you need to hear.
It's not personal. It's strictly business.
It's time you and me had a private talk, winger. Step into my office.
It's Step Into My Office with Michael Lombardi. Mr. Lombardi, we'll see you now.
Starting off with an oldie but a goodie, because Robert Saleh, it's been far too long since you've stepped into the office of Mr. Michael Lombardi. Michael, as we mentioned over the weekend.
He's worn the carpet out coming over here. Are you kidding me?
It's he was in need of an appointment. It's been too long, Michael. It's been too long. And we mentioned that over the weekend, the Jets made another signing. They bring in Hassan Reddick from the Eagles. He is one of many veteran signings that they have made, many of which have had a lot of health concerns, injury issues in the past. There's also a lot of questions about the coaching staff when it comes to this team. But in terms of controllables, Michael, for Robert Saleh, what does he need to focus on to make the most of this offseason and the group of talent that they have acquired?
I think what, Robert, you have to do is find a way to balance getting your team ready to play and not overworking your team. I think it's going to be really important. I think last year you kind of thought it was all going to come together. And Woody Johnson was talking about wanting to get more of you as a head coach, not a defensive coordinator. And I think ultimately that's going to be your role here, is to figure out how to get everybody not healthy for opening day. Not that. When everybody is together at the end of the year. I think use NC State as the perfect example. How can we peak at the right time? Because you're going to have a lot of rust on you. The quarterback's going to be rusty. We know he's not going to play in the preseason. He's going to have minicamp. We understand that Mike Williams is rehabbing. He's going to take time. You certainly don't want to waste Tyron Smith in a preseason game or Morgan Moses. So I think you've got to take September and use it as kind of an extension of the preseason and really do a good job of figuring out how to balance getting ready, not for the opener, but getting ready for the stretch run and getting your team the reps it needs.
Yeah, what I'm most excited to see with this team is if that upgraded offensive line and Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses, if they can stay healthy and protect the quarterback, because that was, I mean, the offensive line play and the injuries that they sustained throughout the course of the season, it was abysmal. It was brutal. Sitting right now, win total 9.5. They're plus 220 in the division, 22-1 in what feels like a Super Bowl or bust season, oddly enough, despite the year that they are coming off of. How about Jamal Shedd, guard for Houston? He's stepping into the office. Consensus first team All-American year. Led Houston to a top seed, Sweet 16. He ends up going down with a sprained ankle in the first half of their last game of the season, falls apart against Duke. What advice would you give Jamal Shedd as he heads to the NBA after this disappointing ending to his illustrious collegiate career?
You know, I think ultimately every setback obviously opportunity for a comeback. And I think everybody recognizes from every coach you played against, from Buzz Williams to everybody, to your own coach, Kelvin Sampson, about how good of a player you are and how your work ethic and how your ability to defend anybody on the court. That's going to separate you in every single draft. That's going to separate you from everybody as you move forward. So, you know, it's unfortunate you sprained your ankle and you couldn't have beaten Duke, because you and I both know you would have beaten Duke. There's no question. Your mental toughness would have carried you over the Duke Blue Devils. But that's behind you. And all you can do is control on what you control. Get healthy. Get in the best shape you can. Get ready for the NBA draft and just show the people in the world that you can do this on a higher level, which everyone knows you can.
Someone else who needs to get healthy, Daniel Jones, coming off a serious knee injury, has had neck issues as well. And despite signing a four-year, $160 million deal with the Giants a season ago, the Giants are talking about potentially taking a quarterback in the top 10, not putting a kibosh on the potential of trading up as well to get their guy if they fall in love with somebody. If you're Daniel Jones, how should you be approaching this time of year and trying to live up to that contract that they believed in you enough to sign last year?
Well, I think the number one thing you have to do, Daniel, is get healthy. That's one. Two, you've got to win back your teammates. You got to get the confidence in you. And you can only do that by controlling what you control. Work hard, prepare hard, and then you're going to have to make some critical plays at critical moments in the game, because there's doubt within that building. There's severe doubt that's placed on you, whether it's right or wrong, it's there. There's doubt whether they can win with you playing quarterback. The doubt comes from their the coaches to the players. And somehow you're going to have to erase that doubt. And the only way you erase that doubt is by leading your team in the fourth quarter, by making plays on third down, by helping your team win. Because right now you're looked upon as the guy that they signed before Saquon. Mm-hmm. And as Saquon has a career in Philadelphia, you're going to have to magnify your career in New York to match it. Because everyone's going to keep saying, well, you know, we have Daniel, but we don't have Saquon. And that's not your fault. That's John Mara's fault. So you can only control what you control. And you're going to have to make plays and remove the doubt. And it's not going to be easy. You're going to have to be mentally tough and you're going to have to be mentally strong to handle this, because you're going to throw some incomplete passes. You're going to make some mistakes. You're just going to have to battle through it. But the one thing you can't do is look over your shoulder. That will do you no good. All you can do is control what you control.
Before getting knocked out of the season in his sixth game of the year, 2 touchdowns. 6 interceptions for Daniel Jones. So we'll see if he can get healthy and get right on the football field. Let's go to DJ Burns as we return to college basketball. Everybody's favorite player in 2024. He had 29 points in 29 minutes against Duke to send NC State to the Final Four for the first time since 1983. But this regular season for this team was mediocre, 17 and 14. They are not power rated highly, yet have won 9 straight games. How should Burns attack Purdue's Zach Edey in the Final Four with the big men going at it down low?
Well, I think you just got to take the game to him, right? You know, you're going to have to be as physical and match him physicality. You're going to have to stay out of foul trouble, right? You're going to have to be on the court. You can't win this game with you sitting next to coach. You're going to have to be on the court. You're going to have to play. And I think you're going to have to use your physicality. You're going to have to make him work, right? You got to make him be tired. And we saw stretches yesterday, and you watched the game closely, where when Eddie was running up and down the court, he would get tired. I mean, big men get tired quicker than the little guys do. You know, he's moving that big body up and down the court. And that's when you got to take advantage of it. You got to have to fight this battle like a true boxing match. You're going to have to pick your spots, back off, pick your spots, come back, but make them work. And you got to do everything in your power to stay out of foul trouble, because they're going to come right after you. They're going to try to get you in foul trouble. That's going to be all Painter talks about, is how can we get the big fella in foul trouble, right? How can we get Burns in foul trouble to make the mistakes? And I think ultimately you've got to understand that. That doesn't mean you are just going to walk away and not have contact, but you got to be really smart. You can't have dumb fouls like we saw PJ Hall get on a loose ball. You got to be really smart. And because in the last 8 minutes of the game, if Purdue is going to be able to beat you, it's going to be because you're not on the court.
NC State, the first school in NCAA tournament history with 14-plus losses in the regular season to reach a Final Four. Go Pack, go. But let's turn the tables and go to Zach Edey then as he steps into the office. Michael, a 2-time National Player of the Year, had 40 and 16 against Tennessee, sending the Boilermakers to their first Final Four since 1980. What does Edey need to do to close things out strong with all of the expectations that are on this team to have success?
I think, Edey, you need to be in the right block of the court, right? I think you're a better player when they feed you the ball as it's coming into your right hand and you can move to your left, which allows your right hand to shine. And then I think you've got to work on free throws, because they're going to keep hacking you and you're going to keep going to the line and you're going to have a great day shoot. You can't have an air ball in the last 4 minutes of the game like you did yesterday. You can't have that. We can't have that. They're going to foul you. If we're going to win the game against NC State or even against Connecticut, if we're fortunate enough to get there, it's going to be because you're really good at the line and we're cashing in on the fouls that get accumulated up on you. So to me, this is when you're playing in these kind of games, it's not about doing something different. It's about doing what you do best. You're best when you get the ball in the right block. You're best when you can create fouls, and you're really good when you go the line. And I think ultimately those are the three things you have to continue to work on and continue to be a physical presence inside.
22 free throw attempts against Tennessee. And after that Elite Eight win, he said in the post game, "They thought they knew us, man. They thought they knew what we had in our hearts. They didn't. We're bleeping winners." Let's see if they can pull a Virginia. We know in 2018, they get knocked out the first round of the tournament, go on to win the national championship after all is said and done. Can Purdue do the same after the devastation that was that loss against Fairleigh Dickinson a year ago? We will be right back when we return on the Lombardi Line. Looking at Michael and I's final four selections. How have they turned out? Mine not so good. I'm just gonna be honest. I'll tell you next.